Good morning, everybody. I'm Mike. I'm a sexaholic. And I will be one of your leaders. Lawrence and I were leading. We are your panelists for this session. And I know each of us will share for a few minutes on the topic of the topic is newcomers, the sobriety definition. It's not just for newcomers though. It's for anybody that wants to experience their strength and hope, and we're going to share our strength and hope with our experience with the sobriety definition. We will then open the meeting for sharing or questions again. We ask that those who choose to share step up to the microphone so that those who listen to this meeting can follow the discussion. In the spirit of the fifth tradition to carry the message, this session will be recorded. The recorder will not be turned off during the session. If you do not wish to be recorded, you may participate by listening or attend another session. We ask that those who choose to share step up to the microphone so that those who listen to the recording can follow the discussion. Please do not tamper with the microphone or recording equipment. Will you please join me now with a moment of silence and the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I will not mind be done.
Good morning, everyone. Good
morning.
My name is Lawrence, and I am recovering from lust. Morning. I'm going to take about 10 minutes here and first qualify. My lustaholism took the form of cruising public places seeking to act out with men. And when I came into SA in 1989, I knew that my goose was cooked. What I didn't know was just about anything else. And I came in, and what I heard was, I needed to stop having sex with self. I wasn't married, so the part about not having sex with anyone other than my married spouse was pretty clear, and no sex with myself, so that basically meant no sex. There was this thing that I also heard, which was about and progressive victory over lust, but I sort of figured, well, that's when I progress. So we'll get to that eventually. The problem was that I paid a lot of attention to that rule about no sex with self. And I didn't have sex with self. I stopped masturbation. I stopped going to doing the things I was doing at the places I was doing them with the people I was doing them with. But I never progressed into that whole idea about lust. I stayed sexually sober the way that the program I thought defined it, the way I was hearing it being defined in the rooms, and I kept getting rewards in the program. I could share in the first part of the meeting after 30 days, you know, I could take a service position after 90 days. If you shared on the topic, people started asking you to be their sponsor. And I was getting all these kudos, so my ego was being built up. Even though I didn't notice, it was sort of creeping back up again. Came to international conventions. My first convention was Nashville, 1990. And I just was so excited to be in this fellowship. And life was getting a lot better. There's no doubt about it. The problem is that as it says here in the sobriety definition at the back of the white book, we also need to progress in lust recovery. I didn't get that. And what makes SA unique from any of the other S fellowships is that we recognize the problem not to be sexual behavior in and of itself. but rather the problem of lust. And this meeting today is for newcomers, and I don't know how many of you are newcomers. If you are a newcomer within the last 3 to 6 months or even shorter, could you raise your hand just to get a sense? Okay, well, a number of you are. This is an opportunity for you to take a close look at that sobriety definition and take it for all that it offers. Because true freedom means freedom from compulsive sexual behavior, but also freedom from lust. And there is no progressive victory over the next lust temptation. You're either victorious with the help of the God of your understanding, or you're going to drink. It's either or. And if I look at my recovery that way, that it's more even than, it's even reduced further down than one day at a time, it's one temptation at a time, that is my choice right there. If I can understand the program that way, then progressive victory is that decision in that moment. Where I missed the boat on the progressive was that progressive doesn't mean, well, in general, I guess it's better than it used to be, so I'm progressing. That's the way I justified it. Whenever I would sort of, you know, squint and begrudgingly have to talk about that in meetings the first 3 years that I was in the program. I left the program after 3 years, and I believe it's because I never got the lust part. I didn't feel happy, joyous, and free. I felt like the program was legalistic, and I was trying to be free of legalism. But the thing that I didn't realize was that I had turned it into a legalistic proposition. Not that it's written that way. And that I misunderstood progressive. I took my cues from what I was hearing in the rooms rather than what was the spirit of what was written in the literature. And what happened to me was, after 3 years, I thought, well, you know, God and I are doing pretty well. He and I can probably just handle the rest of it from here. And I left. I took a job abroad, spent 8 years out of the program, fell flat on my face, but you know what? I didn't technically act out. I went back to all my old haunts. I lived abroad at this point. I went to all the same kinds of places, but I thought, ooh, you know, I'm a sexaholic. I can't have sex with self. So you hear the legalism. I just made sure that I didn't have sex with self. And I thought, I'm still sober. Doggone it, God and I can do this on our own. Well, I came back about 8 years later, suicidal. And I had not been suicidal when I first came in. I had been very depressed, isolation, all that stuff, but not suicidal until I came back and I realized this time I knew better. And I felt tremendous shame. I felt that I wasn't going to be accepted back into the fellowship. But when I did finally come back in, I had a check meeting, and I realized this is where the bottom line was for me, that I needed to fully appreciate what progressive victory over lust meant, and that I came to the realization that progressive means I don't go backward. I progress. It doesn't say regressive victory over lust. It doesn't say neutral, sit in neutral. It means progress. So if I recognize that this is also part of my recovery walk, I need to add that onto the threshold, the bottom line of what SA offers me. SA offers a floor, not a ceiling. So I needed to add taking willful lust drinks, as well as looking at pornography and taking prolonged looks at people and things of this nature. And that is what I consider my sobriety date, but I don't dwell on my date because it gets me all back into the whole striving and self-will and legalism. And, you know, because what I used to do was, just to hang on to my sobriety date, I used to retrofit what I was willing to admit to and not admit to just so I can hang on to it. So, you know, if I would, like, go into a lust fog, as long as I didn't have sex, I didn't really confess to that, just so I'd hang on to my date. And that was the sickest part. part of it all. There was the ego just roaring back. So today for me, if I take a willful lust drink, I don't consider myself sober. That to me is progressive. And that is what this program offers me. And I really believe that God graced me with coming into this program and not any other program because of my problems with lust. Because long before I did the things that I did, I fantasized about them, I plotted them, I canceled everything else in my life just to do them. And that has been the freedom that I could otherwise never know for me. So I am never sufficiently grateful, and it's only by the grace of God that I'm even here talking to you today. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Lawrence. Mike is a sexaholic, and I'm grateful for the sobriety that God has granted me one day at a time for almost 9.5 years. I've been one of the very fortunate ones from my first day into SA. I have been sexually sober, but not less free. And in the sobriety definition and also in the SA purpose, it states the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop lusting and become sexually sober. And I've thought about this several times, is why doesn't it say the only requirement for membership is a desire to stay sexually sober and try to stay less free? And through, first of all, I want to welcome you newcomers here for having the courage to come to this convention, whether this is your first meeting or not, or second meeting or third meeting. It's a pleasure to have you here, because without you, I wouldn't be here. Because I know this program works. It's worked for me. I've seen changes in me and other people, and made wonderful friendships, lasting friendships that are internal, not external, of knowing that they are, it's a very intimate relationship I have with people. And when I first came in the program, before I came in the program, I was a great fantasizer. And I fantasized for years and years from the time I was a teenager. Finally, the fantasies took over, and I acted out my fantasies with men, women, and especially with myself for several years, off and on for many, many years. And then God intervened and got me caught. And when I shared with my wife what had happened, it was wonderful that I was able to share it with her. As fearful as I was, and still am sometimes, to share things with her, I wrote her a note and gave it to her at 11 o'clock at night with my grandson sitting by her side. So I had two things going for me. Number one, she was tired. Number two, my grandson was there to protect me. And she turned and says, she gave me that look like, well, I won't say it here because we don't like to say things like that in here. But I thought the worst was going to happen, and the words came out of her mouth. He says, I want to help you. Let me know what I can do. And I said, oh, that's great, because tomorrow I'm meeting with my therapist and I can't go unless you come with me. And I'd been meeting with him for 2 or 3 months at the time. And one of the things I found in this program with the sobriety definition is it worked for me. He told me I needed to go to S programs, so I went to different S programs. And I found loopholes, being able to act out with myself by depriving my definition that I would only do it a certain amount of times, or was with just my wife, whether it was less free or not. And then something happened. I went to an SA meeting and met a man there that was a priest. He'd been in the program about, 8 years at the time, 7, 8 years. Just a wonderful guy. And I asked him about these other programs, and he says, nah, they don't work. They don't work. They don't work. But it worked for me, because I found a fellowship, meeting with other people that are trying to stay sober. But for SA, with me and this guy, Frank, priest, he taught me how to accept the definition that it was for our fellowship, and that I needed to be happy, joyous, and free, and the only way I could do it was by working the program. And then I met my therapist. He taught me you need a sponsor to work through the program. And I go to meetings, and I felt going to a lot of meetings was very good for me. And one of the things I noticed, I was going to a meeting once or twice a week, and the very next day I was really in a good mood. And fortunately for me, my wife made that comment. She says, "Man, you really feel better today." And if I missed a meeting for a week, she says, "Man, you need to go to a meeting." And I noticed how I felt by other people recognizing it and sharing with me how it was. But my therapist, who was in AA, I shared with him our definition. And he thought back and he said, "Does it work for you?" And I says, "Yes." And he says, "Work the 12 steps. Go to meetings and work the steps." And one of the things I found in this program is I need to accept the program as it is and have it work within me. I can debate a lot of things about this fellowship. I don't like some things about the fellowship, but I like the process of the 12 steps. And the things I don't like is are personality things for me, or things that I would like to see change. I'd like to see more spirit, I'd like to see this, I'd like to see that. But overall, this program for me works because the steps, step 1, 2, and 3 are the foundation of my life. And one of the things that I've been involved, this is something that when you've been in the program for several years or you have a lot of serenity within yourself, is to do a top plate meeting. I'm involved in one of them where we cannot, what would you say, share stuff that's, you know, I have a little problem with lust, I have this fantasy. We get it out and bring it right to the table and discuss it. And I found that some people were so strict about this that it didn't work, so I stopped going. But then I started recently, in the last several months, doing this again. But the program is one of the things. I need to be honest. I need to be honest with me, with my sponsor. If you don't have a sponsor, get somebody you can talk to and just share where you are. Share who you are. Tell them you have this problem. And one of the things, I'm grateful for my sobriety, but it's only by God's grace and one day at a time. Because if I try to figure out what's going to happen tomorrow, I'm forgetting about today, and I need to take care of today. And working the steps and knowing that God loves me and knowing that this program is here for me. And sobriety defined in my life is not having sex with self or anybody else outside of marriage. And I worked through having sex with my wife being lust free. And I'll tell you, it was very difficult. And still is sometimes. Because I'm finding that there are times that I'm more interested in staying sober with not having sex with self and not being less free, that I'm going on the slow path to losing the serenity and the sobriety that I do have. And so what works for me on a daily basis is being here. I call this the sandbox of our program, where we rub shoulders and we play in the sandbox with each other. No greater place to be than being with each other. Because this is where sobriety is, this is where serenity is. And I heard... use this a lot. The past is called the past because it is in the past. And I need to forget what I've done in the past. Forgive myself. When I felt God's grace of forgiving me for what I'd done, to not only to my family, but to myself, and felt His peace and serenity, was one of the greatest turning points in my life, because it showed me that this program works. And this happened during the time of the debate or discussion on the sobriety definition of clarification. And I had to get outside that circle and find God's grace, because without it, I would not be here. And I have talked to Roy several times in person regarding where he stands on this. And one of the things that I've learned in the last 2 years, especially from going to the Live and Let Go convention in D.C., that we need to put a lot of emphasis on lust recovery, because that's where sobriety and serenity really comes. And I found that to be very true. Because when I deliberately look at a person or pornography or fantasize deliberately to get a lust hit, I am losing that peace, that serenity of what one of the promises tells us, that we will enjoy life, that we will have a new freedom and a new happiness. And we really, and I couldn't understand why people were laughing in this program. I do now, because we need to insist on enjoying life inside the confines of this program. Yes, there's only one bus for me, and it's SA, the way it works. And I just want to close with just one last thing about the promises. I led a meeting. We have topic meetings in San Diego. And I led a meeting, and I closed with having somebody read the promises, and everybody's turning around looking and said, "That's not the promise. That's not the promises." What I did, I changed the promises from we to I. And they were saying, instead of saying, "We will comprehend," "I will comprehend the word serenity and will know a new peace." That's what we need to do. That's what I need to do. Accept the program. Accept the steps. Go to meetings. Find people that you feel comfortable about sharing. It's not about dumping all the time. It's about listening and being there. When you go to meetings, especially you people, especially those of us who have been in the program more than 3 months, we need to stand at the door and receive those people that are coming in struggling or hurting. We need each other, because I want to isolate. I don't want anybody in my life but me. And it's not a me program. The result is such a wonderful feeling to know that God's grace is here, know that He's forgiven me. But guess what? I can't rest on those laurels that happened yesterday or 6 months ago or a year ago. I need to take today, move my feet forward, accept where I'm at, and accept the fact that this is a spiritual program. And if I work it as a way of life, it will, and it has done for me, is taken away the obsession to lust on a daily basis. Because we don't need a drink to drink. We just need our own mind and our eyes. And if we can take that from the 12 and 12, because these are simple tools, it's a simple kit of spiritual tools for us to find the solution and a change of attitude. The white book has wonderful ideas of how to overcome the obsession of lust. And that's where we start, by going to meetings, finding sobriety, finding the peace within our heart. And actually, I'm really grateful you're here, because you helped me become satisfied. sexually and lust free, because you have the willingness to be here and to carry the message. Actually, we're going to do that side of the side.
Okay, we're going to open the meeting up now. So if you would like to speak, we're going to ask you to line up right here in the front, and we're going to take the microphone.
Is there a chair over there?
Yeah. Okay.
We'll put the microphone right here.
And please try to limit your comments to a couple of minutes so we can give everybody a chance to share.
Good morning. My name is Paul. I'm a recovering sexaholic.
Hello, Paul.
I was in one of the other S fellowships for 3 years, and there were three of us left that fellowship to start SA in our city, and all three of us were from a same-sex background, and I needed the SA approach that ruled out all same-sex behaviour, and for me I had no religious precepts telling me that that's what I needed to do. It was my 20 years of life experience that told me that's what I needed to do. The thing that I found early on in reading the White Book was that underlying the sobriety definition was the lust definition. And if I can find it quickly, you know, that was really the key for me. I think it's page 43. Where is it? It's about defining lust as when I use sex or the thought of sex to reduce isolation, loneliness, insecurity, fear, tension, or to cover my emotions, make me feel alive, help me escape or satisfy my God hunger. And by doing that, I create an unnatural appetite. And that's what I'd done for the previous 20 plus years of my life before I got into SA. And that's why I knew I had to give up all same-sex behaviour. One other way I came of looking at this was that, you know, I had no idea what real sexuality was about. I knew how to do all that stuff with sex, but I didn't know what it was really like, and I didn't have the eyes to see it. And by hanging around the program long enough and hearing enough people on conference tapes, I got an idea of what that looked like, and it was as a totally different order to what I'd known previously, and that, you know, if sex was that serious a problem, I needed a very serious answer. And for me, the idea that I've got to get the ring on the finger before that happens with a woman, that's okay. I need a serious answer for a serious problem. And it was a guy at the last conference who was from a same-sex background who really summed it up, where he said that in terms of recovering sexuality or godly sexuality, he's not called to love 1,000 women, he's only called to love one woman in 1,000 ways. And I've seen that in this program. I've seen men from, you know, not from a same-sex background, who suddenly find that the woman they marry is someone who was completely off the radar previously. So I don't need to even think about that issue. Okay, being married to a woman is off the radar for me at the moment. That's fine. That probably means I'm in a really good place. And just quickly, three quick experiences on newcomers. You know, one had a glazed look as I was telling him about the sobriety definition. A couple of weeks later, he was angry when it was re-explained to him. And he worked through that. Because, he came to see how deep his problem really was. Another guy walked in and had an AIDS walk t-shirt at the newcomer meeting, and I thought, okay, I think I know what we're dealing with here. And I, again, just shared from my own experience and saying, this is what I need. And I very politely explained the alternative, the way the other programs, and hopefully he got a message of love and tolerance from me, not of judgment. And the third one was someone who was, you know, in a long-term relationship, a guy was in a long-term relationship with a woman, sexually active, and I said, just this, and he'd been to another S fellowship and wasn't getting sober, and I said, just describe yourself as sober today until that issue is resolved. Now, within 18 months he was sober, and then suddenly he'd gotten married. You know, I didn't need to sort of ram the sobriety definition down his throat, but then he wasn't challenging it in a meeting. He was only ever describing himself as sober today, and he eventually got it. He got what this was about, that it goes to that deeper meaning of the lust free. What are all those things that are part of my lust that I'm covering up? Thanks.
Thank you. Just remind yourself that you're being recorded, so speak into the mic and limit yourself to about 3 minutes.
Okay. Hi, I'm Luke. I'm coming from Belgium.
Hello, welcome.
Thank you. I was already in another S fellowship for about 10 years, and then 5 months ago I got to know about SA by another fellow from Belgium who went to the previous convention in Akron, and he told me after a relapse that I had, he told me about the concept of lust, and it rang, because I feel like I was looking for a sniper, if that's the right English words, a guy who wants to shoot you. But I was looking in the wrong place. I was looking at my sexual acting out. And of course the sniper, which is lust, got me from the back all times over and over again, because I was concentrating on the right spot. It's like in a movie when a sniper is just throwing a stone to the other side and you think he's over there because you hear some noise there. But so this concept of lust rings. Also, because in all spiritual traditions, in all religious traditions, but spiritually behind it also, they talk about lust. If it's Buddhistic or Hindu or Christian or Muslim religion, they all talk about lust. And it's a universal force. It's a cosmical force. How can I win against the cosmical force? Before I was thinking, yeah, maybe I was trying for years to win against going to prostitutes or against pornography or against masturbating, and I didn't realize I couldn't win against it because it's. But now I realize, little by little, that I really cannot win against it, because it's really a cosmical energy. It's something like envy. It's with a capital letter E or with a capital letter lust. I really cannot win against it. It's too huge for me. And another thing is, which helps me one day at a time now, is I really want to surrender my lust. I really want to surrender lust. I really want to get rid of lust by the grace of God. But I don't allow myself to think about my sexuality. I'm single for the moment. I give my sexuality to God, and I let Him to decide in which time, which place, it might come back in my life. And I even don't let myself to think about it, to think about my sexuality, about the when and if and how, because for me it's impaired thinking. So, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Brent. I'm a sexaholic.
Hey,
I'm grateful to be here. I wanted to read something from our white book, and I won't make it lengthy. Page 192, the real problem for all of us, single, married, man, woman, from whatever lifestyle, is one and the same, the spiritual misconnection. Moving down a few lines, physical sobriety is not an end in itself, but a means towards an end. Victory over the obsession and progress in recovery. A few more lines down. Better to acknowledge what we really are than hide behind the badge of a sobriety date, cheat ourselves, and threaten our union with one another. And the words that leap out to me are the spiritual misconnection. That's the stuff in my head. And I often was angry when I came to SA because I was failed at SAA and was coming to the conclusion that I couldn't have sex with self, and I had an attitude that said any God that's demanding that is just a no-good God. I used a lot more vulgar language. But this idea that I have to increase my, I have to enlarge my spiritual life is what the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says. And I'll read this and then hush. Because I think it's important to realize I'm the man in this book. The Four Horsemen brought me to that point. But, you know, they don't use the word lust in the big book, but I wanted to share that this is right from Bill Story, page one. Here was love, applause, war, moment sublime with intervals hilarious. I was part of life at last in the midst of excitement. And for me, I say, I discovered fantasy and television as a young child. Later in my teen years, I was very lonely and again turned towards the JCPenney catalogs. I fancied myself a leader, for had not I gotten A's in math classes, my talent for leadership, I imagined, along with a college education manipulating my mother, would place me at the head of vast enterprises which I would manage with the utmost assurance. So when I can identify fully with this approval, attention, affection stuff, that stuff started way before I was ever sexual. It was just this deep desire to be connected to other people, and I get that through the steps and God and service, but I have to do the work, and I need to trust the literature. I need to always come back to the literature. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm David. I'm a sexaholic. I tried a lot of different sobriety definitions for myself. The first one was to not cheat on my girlfriends, and that one I got in trouble with everything else I did. And the next one that was pretty fun was to only look at decent pornography, like no longer the bad stuff, you know. And for some reason, I kept on going back. You know, I couldn't do that for some reason. And then I got it. I need to stop using pornography altogether. And that didn't work. Because every time I would masturbate, I would just be like, screw it. What's the point? And then I would go and be back at my bottom. And finally, after a really horrible slip, on my sobriety date, which is June 16th, 2006, I really got it, okay? For me, I'm not addicted to pornography. I'm not addicted to sex. What I'm addicted to is lust. That's the core of my addiction. So, like, the alcoholic is not addicted to beer or is not addicted to whiskey. The alcoholic is addicted to the core ingredient inside those things, which is alcohol. And for me, that core ingredient is lust. And once I realized that lusting needed to stop, that I could no longer engage in lust, which for me meant I could no longer fantasize, I could no longer look at the pornography, I could no longer look at girls in a way that in a lustful way. I mean, I could tell for myself when the lust drug was going in my system. I could feel it throughout my entire body. And once I was able to realize that that was what my problem was, that's when I was able to get sobriety and all that other stuff. That's when I could stop all those compulsive behaviors and all that stuff, is when I realized what I was addicted to. Before that, I didn't really know. That's all I got.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Mike. I'm a grateful recovering sexaholic.
Hi, Mike.
Lawrence, Mike, thanks for your share. Thanks for all the shares. This is probably the most difficult. I've been in the program 11 months. It's my third time. I've had 9 weeks of sobriety as of yesterday. I'm really glad to be here. This is my first international. I meet with a group of guys. It's 5 minutes from my house. A priest was the person that suggested that I go. Lust was such a integral part of my 35 years of addiction. I never was able to identify that as the problem. I always thought that my problem was the same problem everyone else had. And it wasn't until I was made aware that my life was totally unmanageable that I came to the end of myself and realized I needed help. And for me, a personification of the issue of lust, I call it, my name for it is my luster. Now, I'm an Air Force retired pilot, and I've flown most of my life, and so I'm very anal retentive. And so for me, it's very important to visualize and identify what is this enemy. I'm a trained killer, right? Okay, go out in there and drop bombs and shoot planes out of the air. I had to be able to visualize who this enemy was for me. Well, for me, it's my luster. What does that look like? And so over time I was able to identify my triggers because of the help of the program, and identifying a lot of the issues that I struggle with that want me, when my brain opens up, to get that shot of adrenaline or whatever it is that I need to satisfy whatever that want is that I have. And something that one of the guys in the program helped me realize was, Mike, every time you sit down at that computer, before you turn it on, you have to understand that what you're about to do is open up an opportunity for your luster to jump out there and really grab you. And so it took me quite a while, it took me months before I actually got a filter that totally prevented me from getting anywhere near the pornography. And at that point, I think, is when I crossed the line and I realized that I can never go to a computer that doesn't have a filter on it, or I am in deep, deep trouble, because that luster's right there. It's staring me in the face and just waiting for me to just jump out at me. And so for me, at the beginning, sobriety was, okay, I don't have sex with another woman outside of my marriage. It was okay to watch a porno flick as long as I didn't masturbate. And I was sober. And then is when the guys in the group told me, hey, your sobriety is way off base here, way off base. And I had to constantly reset my sobriety. I mean, it was almost like every time I came to the meeting, I had to reset my sobriety. Well, I wasn't serious about being sober. And then the other realization was, sobriety is a process to what you want, which is recovery. You want to be recovered. And recovery is a lifelong journey. You're never going to get there until you're dead. Okay? So I think for me, being here in this room today, I'm so happy that someone was able to impress upon me, and I understand the legalism part of this very much. I do, because I'm very much a legalistic type person. You've got to understand what this luster looks like and when it hits you, and that's when your brain kicks in, you start working the steps. Anyway, thanks for letting me share.
Thanks,
Mike. While we're waiting for other people to step forward, there was a letter that Roy wrote to one of the fellowships that had asked him to speak. And this isn't conference approved, but it's illustrative of the problem. And let me just see if I can find it here. Maybe I didn't bring it. No, I didn't bring it. Well, it was something like this. Someone who was leading a meeting and claiming 3 years of sobriety had also said in that same meeting that he had watched pornography in the past several days. There was a newcomer in the room who had come because he could not stop looking at pornography, and he was told that if he came to SA, there was hope that he might actually be free of watching pornography. And so here was this deeply disappointed newcomer hearing that, well, this fellow is claiming sobriety, but he's also still looking at pornography. What's up with this? And there is something wrong with a perception of the sobriety definition that says this is perfectly fine. It gets back to this whole idea of, what does that sobriety definition mean to you? And what I get out of the sobriety definition the second time around for me is that I have to keep adding to it. And that God reveals to me every day what gets added to it. And that is where that personal journey is important. And the rigorous honesty comes in your own program, and not using yourself as your own accountability. I need to be accountable to at least my sponsor, but maybe even to a broader accountability group, so that I don't get into that justifying my way and sort of backing my way back into my next relapse without even realizing how I got there. So I think that's really crucial. Many people in this room are newcomers, and we need to think about the newcomer in the room if we don't even want to think about ourselves. We certainly should be doing that too, but that newcomer is there seeking hope, and it may be their last hope. And this program does offer hope of victory over lust, and we need to carry that message, because that's really what our literature says. So with that, if anyone else would like to step forward, I'm going to turn the mic back over to you.
Hi, I'm Anders. I'm a sexaholic. So I tried the program for a while without an SA sponsor, because I didn't like the way that a lot of the guys in the SA program were working the steps, so I thought I'd just work it with an AA guy. And I still work with him, but I wasn't growing spiritually, really, without an SA sponsor. And so recently, I was really very wishy-washy. I'm not very sober now, 47 days or something. And my sponsor said to me, after a while of my relapsing or lusting, he finally said to me, "I can't help you, and I'm not firing you, but you're not in the program because you don't have a desire to stop lusting and become sexually sober. It's right there in the book, the only requirement for membership." And I used to think of that as like setting the bar low, like all you have to do is sort of be upset with your life and want it to change. But it says the desire to stop lusting and become sexually sober. That's a high bar for me. I don't have the sanity required to say, "This is killing me, I want to stop." Even here today, like I have some desire, and not as much as I need to have. Anyway, when he said that, he just said, "Pray for the willingness, you know, to become sexually sober and to stop lusting." And I don't know how it happens, but anyway, it's happening now, day to day. And I'm just realizing here in this meeting that I have to pray for more willingness for sobriety. What I'll do is I'll say, "Well, I'm not looking at certain body parts, but I can't make certain kinds of eye contact because I know I'm getting drunk. Just want to make eye contact." Or I'd say to myself, like, "Oh, I see that person in the corner of my eye. I wonder what kind of shoes they're wearing." And I'll look at their shoes. Like, why am I doing that? And I just remember someone saying in an AA meeting one time, "I have to wake up every morning and ask God for enthusiasm for this program or I'm dead." So thanks for reminding me, you know, that that's what I need. I love the sort of spiritual humility I hear in these rooms about you have to be willing, and if you're not willing, ask for that, and even that will be provided to you. Thanks.
Hi everyone, I'm Terry. I'm a recovering sexaholic.
Hey Terry. Where
I come from, we're a small fellowship, and there wasn't really anybody in our true groups that had 30 days sobriety, and there wasn't focus. The whole lust thing just was, it wasn't in the consciousness of the group, and there wasn't unity within our group over SA sobriety, the definition of what that was. So we weren't around a common purpose, really. We were just people who came together and talked about their sexual problems, and that was about it. And people were not getting better. So over time, what we ended up having to do within our area was to be more explicit about how folks come to our groups. That you know, in our interview process, if folks wanted the SA program, then they were welcome to come. If they didn't want that, we didn't let them in. We told them that there were other S fellowships or other programs, and we wish you well, but this is what we need, and this works for us. And if it doesn't work for you, that's okay. And over time, that has helped us to kind of get to the point with our group that we are focused now on recovery from an SA perspective, that lust is the problem, and we're not sitting around debating in a legalistic sense what we can get away with, what we can do, what we can't do. You know, it talks somewhere in the big book about, you know, resign from the debating society. You know, when the sobriety definition comes up in a group and as a point of discussion, and it becomes a really debate, that's really a gauge, a barometer of the spiritual health of the group. And now that's not a problem, because the folks who are here, this is what we want, and this, you know, we're in unity. And that was important for me, because tradition one says that personal recovery depends on SA unity. That means my recovery depends on this. If this group is not there to carry the message to newcomers, but I still need to hear the message that lust is the problem, okay? If this group's not in unity on it, my recovery is at risk. Okay, that's all I have.
Hi, I'm Brian. I'm a sex addict.
Hey, Brian.
I'd just like to put some ideas out for consideration. I think that it's right what people are correct in saying that the root is lust. And I think that if we look at food addiction, which is something that is quite common, and I think we can understand quite easily about being overweight or very seriously overweight, that, you know, the problem really isn't the eating itself, it's the lust for food. And so that to overcome that, you have to overcome the lust for food. So I think it really applies to sexual addiction. I think that we have to overcome the lust. So I think that other things like saying that the same sex is wrong, or sex with self is, I think that's off the mark, because it would be like saying to people, if you're going to stop your food addiction, then you can't ever have alcohol, or you can't ever eat meat, because then that becomes political, I think. There are people who have political agendas about not eating meat, or just being vegetarian, or not eating, having alcohol. So I think that the fundamental goal is to deal with one's lust. So thank you very much.
I just had a question.
Yeah, come on to the mic. Come on for the mic.
I'm Mike. I'm a grateful recovering sexaholic. My question is, hi. My question is, can we talk for the next few minutes on what your definitions are of toxicity as it relates to lust? Lust being a toxin or a toxic. I don't know if you're familiar with that or.
I've heard
that, yeah. You want to make any comments about that?
Well, Lawrence is looking it up. Mike is a sexaholic. Toxicity begins with that first look. And the more I look, the more level of uneasiness comes within my body. And one of the things that I found in my own recovery, I'm going to talk about myself only, is it wasn't until I'd been in the program about a year and a half that I did the fourth step, that I realized my problem was lust. That it was me deliberately wanting to look at a woman to lust after or to act out with that person. And working with my sponsor, he shared with me, you need to worry about your sobriety. You need to worry about your level of lust, because I was not acting out with me or my wife or anybody else for all that time, and still haven't done. But there are times that I had so much lust in my body in one day that I had to ask God to give it to me. Let me have it. But I don't want the pain to go with, that goes with it. So relieve that pain. And when I do that, that toxicity, that anger, that resentment, disappointment, or the legalistic part of our program discussing what the definition is and debating about it, I found acceptance is the answer to all my problems. And I needed to stick around for the miracle. And that's one thing that I would encourage you to do, is to stick around for the miracle. Because it does happen and will happen. I've seen it in so many of my friends. I've seen it in so many people that get that miracle. And then they forget how they got to where they are. They forgot the steps. They forgot God was in charge. And then we go right back out. And that's why I love these conventions, because it's a reminder to me of how serious this disease is and how easy it is for me to step off the wagon. Really, really easy. And I can do it in a heartbeat.
Thank you for that question. I just want to read what the White Book says about toxicity on page 32. It says, "What we might call the toxicity of lust becomes especially apparent to us in recovery. We become increasingly aware of the poisonous effects of lust on our thinking and behavior. We have heard members say, 'I'm allergic to lust,' and we know the person is trying to describe the toxic reaction that occurs whenever he or she takes a visual or fantasy drink without even acting out. In sobriety, once we have withdrawn from lust and then let it back in, the toxic effect is felt immediately and strongly. We can tolerate less of it than ever, and it produces a greater disturbance." So I think what the book is trying to say is what actually causes the toxicity from person to person may be a different thing, but the effect is universal. We know it. We know when we're in it, and when we're out of it and we come back into it, we know it instantly. That's what I got out of that. Okay. We are at the end of the hour, so if you haven't had a chance to share and would like to, please see one of us afterward. And anything you have heard at this meeting is strictly the opinion of the individual participant. The principles of SA are found in our 12 steps and 12 traditions. And let's join hands and close with the third step prayer.
God, I offer myself to thee, to deal with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, and have victory over them, and bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always.
I guess I'm 24 hours of time. and I saw this 24 hour show, which actually I've never seen this 24 hour show, but seeing that we have like a star over chip and we have like a month chip. I've been in the program for over 10 years at one time, and how did I lose that? I'm going to go to Lawrence, I'm sure, about it, but thought I kind of had it, like, so to speak.